What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Hi everyone, I'm David. I support Gen X Grown Up on Patreon, and you should too. Don't you want to keep this great content coming? So you know what to do. Go to genxgrownup.com/patreon and just do it.
Gen X Grown Up is a YouTube channel, website, and audio podcast you're listening to right now. All made for and by people who love exploring media, games, tech, and toys of yesterday and today through the eyes of Gen Xers who refuse to grow up.
Your dinner cannot just be French fries. Basically, life sucks as a grown up.
Welcome back, Gen X Grown Up podcast listeners, to this Backtrack edition of the Gen X Grown Up podcast. I am John. Joining me as always, of course, is George.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
You know that Mo is here.
Hey, everybody.
You know, in the summer of 1983, the third installment in George Lucas's blockbuster science fiction series hit theater screens. The Force was stronger than ever as Return of the Jedi brought a thrilling and satisfying conclusion to that original trilogy and laid the groundwork for what would come decades later. In this episode, we remember and celebrate the 40th anniversary of Star Wars Return of the Jedi.
That's some bullshit right there.
Yeah,
it should not be 40 years old.
Yeah, that doesn't work. Yeah, can we back that off a little bit?
Yeah.
20 be all right.
40 years, whew. Holy cow.
This is a biggie. You guys are more the Star Wars experts, of course, and so this is one of those where I'm going to hold on tight and try to keep up as these guys run through their Star Wars knowledge, but there's so much in Jedi. And look, I love it. I'm a fan, but I'm just not the super fan that many people are, so I have to let the super fans run this, or we're going to get an email saying, what the hell was John talking about? So I thought that was more prudent. Before we jump into that, it is time, though, for some fourth listener email. And this time around, the fourth listener is Butter Spider, longtime listener and supporter. Wow. And this is pretty well aimed, I think, at you, Mo. We talk about having the expert talk about what they know. Butter Spider wrote in to say, I really enjoyed this week's episode. Mo did a fantastic job with the deep dive info on Dungeons and Dragons.
Oh, okay. D&D.
Phew. Right.
Okay.
Thank you.
Wait, what is it I did? I don't know.
Well, because he didn't like spell out what he just said this week's, but we're doing this later.
Yeah, right. Exactly. It goes on to say, there were some things I never knew. I loved D&D from the first time I played, probably started in the sixth grade, I think. That was with basic and advanced. Mm-hmm. I still have all my original books and dice. Nice. I love when people have their old stuff.
Oh,
that's great.
I'm jealous of people who have that.
So, hated those crayon dice. I still have my crayon dice from the basic set with a grease pencil.
Yeah. I've heard people say that before that they didn't like. I loved taking the dice and coloring it in with the crayon and then wiping it off. That was one of my favorite things.
Now, they look amateurish by the awesome dice you can get today.
Oh, yeah.
But it's a nostalgia factor. It's like, oh, I remember coloring that in. Like, I drew that six on the side of that die when I was 12 years old, you know?
But that's what I'm saying. That technique of rubbing the die, you know, the crayon across the die's face to get the crayon inside the...
And they
clean
it off.
I use that now on multiple things. Like, every time I see something that's embedded in, I'm like, oh, I can't see that. Let me get a crayon.
It's like you make it highlight. See there?
Yeah.
Dungeons & Dragons taught you life skills. That's great.
It did.
There you go.
He goes on to say, but I loved all the charts and tables. I would also repeatedly page turn through the books just for the artwork.
Yeah.
It was great.
Yeah. Mm. Yes.
And he goes, and the graph paper.
Oh my God. You're talking about the graph paper.
Well, there's the squares, and then there's the hexes and the octagons and all the, it's so cool. Because wasn't the hexes were like for overland travel usually?
Outdoor stuff, yeah.
Yeah, you're right. He says, I love drawing out the maps as we went along and never had miniatures, but it was never a problem. We just visualized where we were.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. It was so much of a theater of the mind game back then. So many good times. My friend's mom threw away the books during the scare
that we
spoke about a bit. I helped him go dig them all out later before the trash truck came and stored the contraband until the storm passed.
Good man,
Butter Spider. Well done.
That's right.
Yep. I've played 5e recently in person and the online during the pandemic. It's fun, but I think I still enjoyed AD&D more.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. We've heard quite a bit of feedback back from the Dungeons and Dragons episode. It's just the backtracks really, I love when they resonate with people as it did with Butter Spider. I'm appreciative that he hit us up over on Discord over at genxgrownup.com/Discord. Got your plug in there, George.
Nice. There you go. Appreciate that.
We love any time a fourth listener reaches out to us. If you would like your email featured here on the show, it's so easy. Just drop us a line at podcast@genxgrownup.com. We read every single one. And most of them, like Butter Spiders, who hit us up on Discord instead, will eventually make the show. All right. It is finally time. You guys are braced. I'm ready to hang on for dear life. We're going to work our way through Star Wars Return of the Jedi as soon as we get back from this quick break.
Well, hey, podcast listener. My name is Vince, and I'm the host of a show called The RR Show. It stands for Reddit Readings. We're going to sit down twice a week, and I'm going to bring you the most entertaining stories from all of the best subreddits that exist online. Things like malicious compliance, petty revenge, hey, lady, I don't work here. Oh, there's so much more. Lots of great stories and things you won't believe. Like the one time this dude was caught in a bathroom with his friend and he was slapping them because that was the only way that he could actually legitimately help them. A mall cop comes in with a taser. Oh, yeah. The rest is history. It's going to be fun. I don't know. I got like 20 seconds left, so I don't got much more time to tell you another story. But just join me on The RR Show. It's from Evergreen Podcast, produced in partnership with Wessler Media. So The RR Show, wherever you get podcasts, subscribe today. And it's like an adult story time. Let's hang out together. The RR Show. Subscribe today wherever you get your podcasts.
Be sure to subscribe to or follow Gen X Grown Up wherever you listen. And while you're there, rate and review the show, too. It helps more than you know.
Return to a galaxy far, far away.
Here we go again.
Return to Jabba the Hutt.
You will bring Captain Solo and the Wookiee to me.
Return to the Death Star.
Obi-Wan has taught you well.
Return to the Ewoks of Endor.
Not bad for a little furball.
But most of all, return for the fun of it. Return of the Jedi, rated PG. Now playing at a selected theater near you.
So I'm going to start by saying what we're not going to talk about in this podcast.
That feels anticlimactic.
Which is...
highlight the negative. There we go.
That's right. We're not going to cover the story.
George is on board.
Yeah, we're not going to cover the story. You should know this story. If you don't know
That's
this
fair.
Story, I mean, come on.
Right.
Why did you click on this episode?
Yeah, really. I'm sure we'll hit on points throughout this whole episode, sure. But we're not going to actually do like, here's the plot of the story. I mean, everyone knows that. So, but we are going to talk about like kind of what went into making the movie.
Right.
Okay.
One thing I didn't realize is that it was actually supposed to be 1 year after The Empire Strikes Back is when timeline-wise when it was supposed to occur. So only a year is supposed to have passed between those two, the end of that movie and the beginning of this one.
That makes sense, though. I mean, because
it does.
You can tell Luke is coming to his own in some of those first scenes.
Mm-hmm.
And
sure.
that needed some time, at least for him to get the ego, right?
Yeah. To say that he's a Jedi, right? Now, at this point, you know, the first two movies did so well. Lucas had $32 million budget for this one, which is...
That's pretty big for back then.
Yeah, not nothing for back then.
Mm-hmm. 82 money, $32
million.
Money,
yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Whew. One thing that shocked me is they filmed the entire thing in 82, January to May. That's it.
Ooh, that's a long schedule.
Yeah. I mean, but they filmed every... Well, they had to wait for... I guess they did a lot of scene changes. They had a lot of locations they had to go to for this particular one and all that stuff. So it definitely took a while. Lucas personally financed this movie.
He had the money. Why not? He's got that action figure money, man.
And he wanted all the residuals and everything. He wasn't sharing it with nobody.
Well, no, he had gotten a taste of what it was for this behemoth monetary force. And he only got, in the first film, he only got the toy money, really. Second film, I think he got a little bit
more
with
this
the toy
one,
money.
Yeah.
But
this one, though, he's like, yeah, that's it. And it was the first one not directed by Lucas of the three.
Right.
Right.
Actually, Spielberg was his first choice.
No. Oh. Well, by then, they were already collaborating on Indy, right? So they were a team that knew how to put
when
a film together.
When did Indiana Jones
together,
come out? I thought Jones was 84.
Was it?
Was
Indiana
it that
Jones
late?
Came, no, no. Indiana Jones came
like
out 80. No, 82.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, it's right in there. Okay.
Yeah, it was early days
right
of high
school. Right in that
school.
Range. Okay.
But then, Spielberg was his first choice, but he couldn't do it. He asked David Lynch, you know, from like Twin Peaks.
Really?
Yeah.
Dodged
but a bullet. He couldn't do it. So then eventually he found, you know, the director, which I think, George, you're going to cover that when you start talking about like cast and crew and stuff and this stuff. But
right.
So the original title for the movie, which I actually knew about this one, was Revenge of the Jedi.
Mm.
Right.
There were... there was like, you can find early posters and stuff, like promotional stuff.
Yeah.
Do you?
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. That has Revenge of the Jedi. But then, because they first thought Return of the Jedi was just like kind of weak, is what they thought at the time. Mm-hmm. But then when they said Revenge of the Jedi, Lucas said, you know, Jedi are not about revenge. So it doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense. So then they went back to the Return of the Jedi. Although it's funny, the working title, because they're keeping it secret, was Blue Harvest. I don't know why.
Right.
But that was like what they called it, like in all the everything moving up to it.
They were going to harvest our money. They should have called it Green Harvest.
Yeah, really.
The only reason I know that was the like the development name or the code name is because when Family Guy did their parody of Jedi, they called it Blue Harvest.
Oh, did they?
Yeah, it was like Family Guy, Blue Harvest. They used the code name for the film. Yeah. Otherwise, cool. I would not have known that.
There was a lot of question about whether Han Solo was going to be in the movie because Harrison Ford was the only one that only signed a 2-movie deal, not 3.
Mm-hmm.
So the original script actually had him dying in the opening.
What a different movie this would have been.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Different.
Not just the movie, the franchise.
That's true. The franchise. Of course. Right. Oh, yeah. The whole franchise. Right. You're right. Good point.
No kidding.
But so they wound up, they got Harrison Ford to agree to it. I'm sure they gave him a ton of money.
Spoiler alert, he is in the film.
Right? Yeah.
See, that's one of the things that has always bothered me about Harrison Ford is that's the first time I've heard. I mean, it's not the first time I've heard that story. I'm saying this is the first time I've heard him doing this in a movie. And ever since, and it's always colored my judgment of how he behaves.
Oh, yeah.
Because he always seems to be a prima donna kind of an actor to me.
Well, he was the only one out of the whole crew pretty much that he had Indiana Jones come out before this movie.
Mm-hmm. So he had another franchise.
So he had another franchise to work on. So,
you know, what's interesting is that you say, George, it colored your opinion of Ford, but I've seen recent interviews with him just in the last couple of months around the new Indiana Jones film that's coming. And the thing is, he doesn't have attachments to his characters. It's just work for him. I mean, he likes the work and he likes putting in the work and he likes the results. But this interviewer asked him, what's it going to be like for you, the last time you're going to put on the hat to be Indiana Jones for the last time? Is anything for you? And he's like, I'm just not wired that way. And I'm sorry if that disappoints you. I'm not going to miss Indiana Jones. I did that work and I'm proud of that work and I'm moving on to other stuff. I don't feel that way. I think that's why we're attached to his characters, but he's not.
Right.
So it feels like he's being a prima donna.
But it's the stuff that he's done behind the scenes to elevate himself above other people. That's the
he is a cocky guy. Don't get me wrong. I'm not defending that. But I think we paint onto him that he's like he's crass about it. And he just doesn't feel the same way that we do about his characters.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It might also be a good excuse.
Yeah, okay, sure.
Maybe.
He uses that as a shield.
Yeah. But a couple other things I found that they had changed from the original script was that Yoda was not supposed to be in it originally, the original script that they did. But then they felt that they didn't have enough closure from the second movie with him seeing Yoda and stuff that they needed to have Yoda in it.
You know, now that you mention that, the scene with Yoda feels very compartmentalized.
Oh,
like,
it was.
That could have hit the cutting room floor.
It totally could have.
Luke is like, well, I have to go take Sierra some business. And he goes to finish his training. And Yoda says, you're all done. But I can see how that could have just been just something you talked about in dialogue. So I went to see Yoda and he said I was done and he died.
Right.
You wouldn't have to have that. But I'm glad
there were other parts too. Like I distinctly remember suppositions and interviews and stuff from different people involved with the film that Yoda was supposed to already be dead and be a Force ghost in the third film.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Wow. A couple of the things that were different is that they weren't supposed to be Ewoks. They're supposed to be Wookiees.
Right.
I had heard that.
I think would have been a cooler movie. I personally do.
I mean, we sort of got that in the prequels a little bit. We saw a Wookiee planet for a brief second.
I think it was technically difficult to have that many Wookiee characters. That's the only reason I can think of why they didn't go that direction.
Maybe they didn't have as many 7-foot actors available to them.
Yeah, exactly.
I had always heard that maybe it was just like budgetary.
It could have been.
Like it was easier to make a bunch of small costumes than it was to make a bunch of big detailed. You can imagine a Chewbacca costume is probably 4 times the cost of an Ewok costume.
Yes,
so, I don't know if that's true. That's just what I always heard.
And another thing I learned, which this would have been weird, is the original script had Obi-Wan, Yoda, and Anakin literally returning to life and joining that party at the end. Oh, the
scene where they're the ghosts at the end that he looks up at.
Oh, at the end.
They were actually literally supposed to come back to life. Like the Force was supposed to bring them back.
Which I'm so glad that never happens.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. You know, so let me ask you, Star Wars experts. And so when I watch Jedi, at the end of it, where there's the celebration and there's the ghost appear, and then later they add, you know, they change out the ghost with other actors and stuff. That part's irrelevant.
Right.
The point is, that always felt so weird to me. I mean, I got that while he was on Dagobah talking to Yoda, or maybe right after Yoda passed, he had a discussion with the ghost of Obi-Wan. one.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I kind of got that, but he was there for a, like it was a spiritual reason that he was there. It always felt artificial to have those actors go standing off observing and going, very nicely done. Well done. I mean, they could observe their friends from the afterlife without being appearing there. It just felt like pandering to get the actors back on the screen one more time. Maybe that, maybe it's too gospel. Maybe it's too sacrosanct to talk about that
no,
way.
No, it's pandering to the audience. Yeah. I get that. You definitely have Obi-Wan's ghost in multiple locations throughout all three of the films, right? He's mm-hmm. in the cockpit in his ear in the first film. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, he's right. on Hoth in the second film, right? Older he's Dagobah. Directing Luke where to go.
Oh, right.
Right?
Yep.
And then he Dagobah in the third film. So he's all over the place. And then he ends up on Endor in the third film. I think, to me, what they're trying to display in that moment is more of these were the angels on his shoulder kind of a feeling.
Yeah.
Like the guardian angels of Luke, even though one of them is Anakin that, you know, horrifically they replaced
not much
with
of an angel.
Hayden Christensen later. But I think that's what it felt like they were trying to convey.
Hmm. Yeah. And I also think they wanted to show that he did redeem Darth Vader, you know, at the end.
That's another. Yeah.
You know, that he actually did redeem him. He saved him.
Yeah.
Right. So he's now in the same stature as as a Yoda. And
right.
Which is why he's not Vader in the ghost. He's Anakin.
Of course, he's Anakin. Yeah, makes sense. Okay, interesting. Yeah. All right, thanks
it's
for
weird.
That.
Yeah. Now, this may have something to do with the Ewoks, too. This thing is that Lucas made a lot of decisions based on merchandising.
Did we mention he bankrolled the whole thing himself?
Yeah.
What a surprise.
Like Han Solo not dying at the beginning, they said, because he said that Han Solo character, I think it was a quote that you can't sell a dead Han Solo figurine.
And then they put him in carbonite and they sell the shit out of that figure, right? I think for me, it's not just that he based it on merchandising. He didn't have an editing button in this one. And by that, I mean, his wife, who was the main story editor on the first two films, was out of the picture on the third one. So he was surrounded by a bunch of yes men type of people on that third film. And that's why, for me at least, a lot of that film goes off the rails into what the fuck is he thinking here? But
yeah, like his like the cutesy part. So I'm like, what the heck is, it didn't make sense.
She would have slapped the Ewoks in the mouth.
Oh, yeah, she definitely.
No question about it.
And the original movie, they wanted like a Western kind of an old Western ending where Luke saves everybody and he kind of walks off by himself into the distance. You know, like the hero leaves.
They got that in the later films, I guess.
So like instead of the celebration, he's just off on his own.
He's off on his own. But then he didn't like that one, too, because he wanted like a nice upbeat, feel good ending. And again, because he thought because of a marketing standpoint. And one thing I found also was that when he was testing the film, you know, the sound, you know, the music and stuff was so important on this movie. You know, the sound effects, all that good stuff, that they ran a bunch of tests in theaters and he couldn't get the sound right. It just sounded bad. He said that he couldn't hear the music or the vocals were too low or whatever. So what did he do? He started a whole company called THX.
Oh, right. Yeah.
To make sure the Jedi was projected properly.
To make sure that he got the sound quality he wanted in the theaters for it. He created a whole
bunch. Lucas money. Do what you want.
Yeah. I mean, Skywalker sound, THX. I mean, they were in every movie after that. I mean, that was like the standard, you know, for sound.
I mean, half of the stuff that he created out of these films became industry standards for every film after that.
Absolutely.
It just, for as weird as Lucas seems, like personally, when I see him, he's kind of aloof and weird. It's like he takes a shit in a cup and generates a multi-billion-dollar industry out of it. It's like somehow he's got his finger on the pulse of what everything in the film industry needed, and he was on the bleeding edge of it and started it somehow. So you got to give him credit for that. Yeah. There's a level of genius there that I'm not appreciating, apparently.
Well, and I think he also didn't kind of accept things as they were. Like, you can only do XYZ because that's the limitation. He's like, no, we can do better.
Yeah, why?
Here, I'm going to start this company and we'll do better.
I don't agree with all of his decisions, but what I do agree with is his ability to stick to what he wanted.
Mm-hmm.
No matter what anybody said around him, there were very few instances when people talked him out of something. His wife did on the first couple of films, thankfully. But for the most part, if it was something he felt was important, that was it. It was done.
Yeah. The other thing is like during the production of this movie, ILM, you know, Industrial Light and Magic, which he started for special effects, their schedule was so tight that they were running 20 hours a day, 6 days a week for over 6 weeks to get all the special effects done. I mean, they said it was the biggest grind they said that they've ever had. And there are about 900 special effects in the original movie, like individual effects.
And you know, the company couldn't tell him no because he owned it.
Yeah, no, right, he owned it.
Right. But we'd like a day off. Nope, 20 hours a day. Get busy.
It's Sunday. You can take half a day. But the thing I found, which this has nothing to do with anything, but I just thought it was funny because it reminds me of Godzilla, is the Rancor was originally a guy in a suit.
Like what, during testing or something?
That's what they first tried to film, was a guy in a suit. Like Godzilla. They couldn't get it to work. Yeah. And so then they went to the claymation stop motion stuff. I would love to see that suit.
To see the footage, right? I felt when watching it, I watch things from a different kind of eye because of my video production background. And I'm thinking about, well, oh, I see the matte lines, or I see they didn't quite cut this right or whatever. And I noticed it's a mix of technologies, the Rancor, which I think is a neat thing. Sometimes it's a puppet. Sometimes it's stop motion. I would have sworn a couple of shots were a guy in a suit, but maybe not. Maybe it was a puppet. It looked live action, not stop motion, I guess. Maybe that was a puppet. I don't know.
Maybe they kept a couple of the scenes.
Maybe cover shots or something.
You might as well.
But they did it well because they blended the puppetry and the stop motion or whatever. They matched. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and he grabs the pig man and just swallows him and chomps him down. You know, the crunching of the bones.
And the squealing. Yeah.
The squee.
I mean, a lot went into making this movie, even though it was the third movie. A lot of work. And, you know, he was definitely not one to sit on the laurels of what he did before. He definitely kept wanting to push and do more and more with each movie that came out.
Paid off.
Pit Pass Moto, sponsored by Moto America, is the show that keeps you up to speed on the latest in motorcycling and brings the biggest names in motorcycle racing right to you. From candid interviews with the top names in racing to providing insights into the trends and trendsetters driving the motorcycle industry, we have you covered. New episodes are available every Thursday at pitpassmoto.com and on your favorite podcast app. Ride on.
You're listening to Gen X Grown Up. But if you have a friend who's not yet listening, why not? Tell them about us. They'll thank you later.
In a galaxy far, far away, you are needed as a rebel pilot. Become one in the Return of the Jedi Death Star Battle Home video game.
Your mission, fly Millennium Falcon through enemy force field while battling TIE interceptors. Ultimately penetrate and destroy the Death Star before its completion. But beware, the Death Ray can stop you.
Time is running out. Save the rebels. Play Return of the Jedi Death Star Battle from Parker Brothers. If you can stand the pressure.
Mo had exactly one metric ton of super great facts about how that film got made. And I have the privilege of telling you about the people, but I'm not going to go into a bunch of facts on them because 90% of the cast are people, everybody listening to the podcast, just like you know the story, and we're not going over that. You know these people, right? You know what they've done in their careers since then. And it's just important just to take time to highlight them and mention them by name, I think.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
That hadn't occurred to me until just now when you said that, George. There aren't any nobodies in this list of people.
No. There's like two or three that you might, that's the name of that person, but still. First of all, the one who you probably don't know the name of, as Mo mentioned earlier, the director for this ended up being a guy named Richard Marquand. Okay. He is probably most famous after this for the next most famous film he did was a film called Jagged Edge. I don't know if you remember. It was a Glenn Close kind of drama film.
No.
And then just a couple of years after that, he died. 1987.
Oh, really?
So
man,
his career probably would have been pretty solid.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, he passed away, so didn't get a lot of his work.
You know, was he youngish or any idea?
I'm not sure.
He was born in 37, so he was 50. So
okay,
younger
so he still
than
had
we
a lot.
Now.
Yeah, he's still a lot. Yeah,
but, a lot of life.
You know, I think as directors go in Hollywood, they seem to hit that maturity range between their 40s, mid 40s and mid 50s, and so he was in the middle of that golden zone. I think would have been good to see, but unfortunately, we lost him.
It's too bad.
Who we didn't lose, and we still have today, thank God, is probably the greatest ambassador of all the actors for these films.
No kidding.
Yeah. Mark Hamill. And he may also have been the person most hurt by these films out of all the main actors that were involved.
Career-wise, you mean?
Career-wise. Yeah. So if you look at the others, right, the big three. So you got Mark Hamill as Luke Skywalker. You got Harrison Ford as Han Solo. You got Carrie Fisher as Leia Organa. Harrison Ford and Carrie Fisher went on to stupendous careers afterwards.
Sure. Yeah, good point.
Mark Hamill toiled in obscurity for the better part of 25 or 30 years after those films, and really just kind of had to live on nostalgia from those of us who love the films.
And and that was in that valley where there was likely not going to be any more Star Wars done. So he had, if that's all he could do, nobody's doing it. He couldn't get work. I didn't thought
of
that.
And then the ultimate Lucas slap in the face with his penis just
wow. Extra slap.
But Lucas says, oh, we're going to do three more films. By the way, you're not in any of them. Fuck off.
Wow. I hadn't thought of it from that perspective. Damn.
John, you know, we talk about Weird Al. We've talked about on this show multiple times because you and I are huge fans. There's the line from the Weird Al Star Wars theme song where he's talking, you know, how he had the three movie contract I had to sign says I'll be making these movies till the end of time.
Yoda. Right.
Yeah. That's what happened to Mark Hamill. But at no time in at least his public persona have I ever seen the man deride these films or what they've done. He has been the best ambassador, and he has done stuff. I think of, there's a Kevin Smith film. It's Jay and Silent Bob going to Hollywood, and there's a movie being made about their characters. And in one scene, they're in the Batcave thing of their characters, and Mark Hamill comes out as Cockknocker, got this giant fist, and they've got lightsabers, and George Lucas is going to sue somebody. But under his under his image, when he comes out on screen and says, "Hey, everybody, it's Mark Hamill." He's never been Harrison Ford about it. That's what I love about Mark Hamill.
I almost feel Mark Hamill like followed the Adam West model of, if I'm typecast, let me find a way to make lemonade out of the lemons.
Yeah.
Now, he did do some great voice acting work in the mid 90s, right? Yeah. He did some great animation stuff in the Batman universe on DC's animated
Joker.
Side.
What a Joker he is.
Oh, God, voice. Lord. I mean, just crazy stuff. But he really got hurt the most. Now, Harrison Ford, you guys have heard me talk about him. We've got him on the list. Just not a big fan of his. He's the best actor for that character, I think. I don't think I could see anybody else doing it. I'm just not a fan of the guy.
It's hard not to map his real life personality onto a little bit of the character. Yeah. But because he's that kind of a cocky, self-important guy, so is Han Solo. You know,
right?
It's like, who else could have been Tony Stark but Downey Jr.? Well, because he's that guy already, you know?
Yeah. It's not really acting.
Yep. Yeah. Is it acting? Right.
I mean, you got Carrie Fisher, who was the sweetest, most angelic person in the first film, all the way through to the tough as nails broad in the second, and then the twisted up, torn apart by her love and her brother and everything in the third film. I thought her character arc was really well done, and I thought she played it beautifully. You've got some returns as well. You got Billy Dee Williams coming back as Lando Calrissian.
Yep. That was such an odd casting.
Smoothest Colt 45 drinking motherfucker on the planet.
That was such an odd casting. It works. It definitely works. It was an odd casting choice.
Mm-hmm. It was. Now, you know, the character was later portrayed by Donald Glover, who I thought
that works
embodied
too, right?
Billy Dee Williams really well, even though the film wasn't that great.
You know, you guys are going to jump on me for this, but it wasn't until I was rewatching Jedi that I remembered how big of a part Lando had in Jedi. Of course, he was a big deal in Empire, right? He's in the Cloud City, he's doing all this stuff. And I forgot, when, as soon as I saw him in the mask, kind of incognito in Jabba's palace, I'm like,
right,
what? Lando is here? I'd forgotten how a big part he still had in the film, because he didn't have to be Lando Calrissian. That character could have been any rebellion general. Yeah. It's just they used him and they repurposed him, it felt to me. I don't know if I'm off base with that.
I mean, they evolved the character very quickly between
the
two.
Yes, he's not the same character. Mm-hmm. That year has definitely passed. Yeah.
But I think they did it because they realized they had the talent to do it with. And Billy Dee Williams, for all of his foibles, is an amazing talent on screen. Now, somebody who is also an amazing talent on screen, but has complained endlessly about what he had to do in these films.
Oh, yeah.
Is Anthony Daniels as C-3PO. That man will not shut up about how unfriendly that suit was to his body during those three films.
I remember seeing a scene as a kid of the first Star Wars. Like, it was one of these making ofs they used to put on TV.
Mm-hmm.
And they had one for the first movie in the sand dunes. It was a real desert they were in. And him walking and also just like collapsing. Like he just like passed out because it was like so hot. And the funny thing is that I think he has played C-3PO in every incarnation of that character that there has been animated movies, everything.
There was a time when they were going to recast C-3PO in these latest films. And they said, no, we've got to have Anthony Daniels. And they had to talk him into it. He didn't want to come back for these last three.
Oh, yeah. But you'll see him. I'm glad they did. I'm glad they did, too.
Now, somebody who did not complain about the suits that he had to wear in this film, Kenny Baker. God love him. That tower of a man, and I know I'm saying that, you know, because of his physical stature, played R2-D2 in all of those films. And you want to talk about a horrible costume to have to put on? Holy hell.
He just sits in a box.
And he was doing all of the work inside that unit. He's rotating the head, flashing the light, like all that stuff is around him and everything. Crazy.
He had to become an engineer to run. Like he's a special effects engineer, basically. Yeah. And an actor at the same time.
And then they said, by the way, we ran out of people to put in the Ewok costume. So go be Poplu, if you don't mind.
If you don't mind.
Be an Ewok too. So he jumped into that. You guys mentioned earlier it was supposed to be Wookiees instead of Ewoks. Well, we did get Peter Mayhew back.
Yes. Oh.
God rest his soul. Back as Chewbacca. That was awesome. John, your favorite puppet, Yoda, back in the movie with Frank Oz doing the puppetry and the voice.
A Muppet I am.
Oh, my God. Oh, God's good.
And then we get to one of those names that you guys may not, well, Mo will recognize. John, you might not. Jeremy Bullock came back as Boba Fett.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I don't know him from other stuff. I know the name from Jedi, but I don't recognize him as an actor outside of it.
Exactly, because this is really his only mainly what he's done.
Is that it?
With his acting career, This was, you know, the second film. He did have a few speaking lines because of the success and everybody loving him in the second film and now in the third film. But, of course, we lose him to the Sarlacc pit early on in the film. We find out now, 30-some-odd years later, that we get him back, which was a great thing to do. They cast a different actor.
In, like, Mandalorian stuff? I haven't watched all those. Is that they brought him back somehow there?
Mandalorian Season 2, we see the return of Boba Fett because he comes back to get his armor that Mando, the Mandalorian, has found.
Okay.
Right? On Tatooine. Yeah. After Season 2 of The Mandalorian, they do a first season of Boba Fett, the Book of Boba Fett that you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
All of those storylines take place about a year after Return of the Jedi.
Oh, so Sarlacc Pit, not as deadly as we once suspected.
Well, armor. He had the armor to help him.
He had the Beskar armor, which is basically impenetrable.
He still got kind of screwed up, though. It's not airtight, apparently. Or not watertight.
Well, maybe it is because they fly in space in the last season of Mandalorian. So who the hell knows, with those suits?
Okay. All right.
They got some kind of magical force shield or some shit. Who knows? The one guy that for years I didn't realize it was the same actor playing this character throughout all of the films that the character's been involved in.
Yeah.
Ian McDormand as the Emperor.
Mm-hmm.
I had no idea it was the same guy.
Yeah, they got him to come back.
In the prequels, he plays himself much younger, right? He's basically that guy in the prequel-wise, but without the makeup. Yeah.
I kept thinking that they did a thing like they did with Anakin Skywalker's ghosts. I kept thinking, oh, they've retrograde re-put. But I went back and got the originals. No, it's Ian McDormand.
It's originally him.
Originally, a guy named Alan Webb was supposed to play the Emperor, but he dropped out because he got sick. Some other people that were up for the role, Lindsay Anderson, Ben Kingsley, and David Shushet.
I can see Ben Kingsley. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Gandhi becomes the Emperor.
Yeah.
Gandhi becomes the Emperor.
I think I'm happy that Ian McDormand is the guy who
Me too.
Yeah, there.
For sure.
Yeah. And I'm saying his name wrong, but I don't give a shit.
That's okay.
Darth Vader. Let's get to him. David Prowse and James Earl Jones.
Of course.
Now, you got to have David Prowse for the physicality, but if you don't have James Earl Jones, it's not Darth Vader. I don't give a shit.
Yeah, it's not.
I know that other people have done the voice in different media,
yeah,
but nah, James Earl Jones or bust on Darth Vader.
Now, is it true? I remember hearing that David Prowse did not know his voice was going to be replaced when he took the role and recorded the scenes.
Yeah.
And was somewhat surprised to find out. But
yeah, it wasn't. Yeah.
But dude, you have a job. You've been paid. Hush. Do you want to be back the next movie or not? So,
yeah. Well, not just that, but you got replaced by James Earl Jones.
You know what?
You should understand that, right?
That's a good point.
Like if all of a sudden Mo stopped talking and James Earl Jones's voice started coming out of his face, we would be okay with that.
Mo, we'd miss you, but not terribly.
Not miss you.
That's like, honey, you're leaving me? Oh, you're leaving me for Brad Pitt? I get it. Right? It's like, I understand.
In the reveal scene later on at the end of the film, we do have Sebastian Shaw as Anakin Skywalker. So this is the first actor to play Anakin Skywalker, not the Hayden Christensen, which that guy gets a lot of shit. God bless him. He did his best. I'm not going to give the guy shade. He tried.
Yeah, I agree too.
I always wondered why they just didn't have Prowse play Anakin Skywalker, since they already had an actor playing inside of the suit. The voice wasn't the same once the suit came off. Was he just not a good actor? Or
I don't know. In that film.
Yeah, in Jedi.
Maybe he's not the right look.
But you're covered with prosthetics.
Yeah, I know Shaw is substantially smaller than Prowse.
Yeah.
So I wonder, the only thing and this makes no sense, so this can't be right, but could it have been like a camera angle kind of thing or some shit? I don't know.
But, yeah. It was always curious to me that they had a third guy play him just for that little bit when you had two other people already playing him and you hadn't seen him yet.
They really hated David Prowse's voice because they just didn't want that shit anywhere, apparently.
That's true.
I remember someone once saying that the dailies, they were saying he was a space hillbilly because he has a bit of a southern accent.
Mm-hmm. Oh, right.
So maybe it wasn't his appearance. Maybe he just didn't have the voice that could have been the vocal changed suit from voice.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
It just wouldn't fit. Okay. Anyway, just curious.
We did get, as you alluded to, John, we get the Alec Guinness comeback, you know, as the ghost Obi-Wan Kenobi.
A ghost you are.
Situation. But I think my favorite film debut of that era, Warwick Davis's first feature film as Wicket.
He was a young man. Wasn't he like in his teens or something? He was a
very young. I think I don't think he was even 20 yet.
Oh boy. Yeah.
Wow.
And then he went on to be Willow and just, he was a big working actor.
That was his first role. I didn't know that was his first role.
He played in the Harry Potter franchise.
Yeah.
As that's Professor right. Flitwick. Yep.
Actually, he's a Gen Xer. He was born in 1970.
All right, Warwick.
That's right.
There you go. So you'd have been 12.
He should be listening to this show, right?
That's right. I'm sure he's listening. Thanks, Warwick.
He was 12 when he filmed that.
12. So he wasn't even a teenager.
Wow.
82, 70. That's 12.
That's 12.
Wow.
Yeah. There you go. Damn.
Crazy.
Jeez, what a cast.
Well, just across the board. And again, you said all these people, aside from maybe Hamill, all of them continued to have careers. Maybe the guy, I don't know if Anthony Daniels did other things, but he also wasn't typecast to prevent him from doing other things.
Right.
Like poor Skywalker was, you know, Hamill.
No, and I was wondering, like, I'm trying to think of an earlier example of like a trilogy or multiple movies, sequence movies, where they kept the same cast.
Without people cycling.
I mean, what's the earlier trilogy? The closest thing you're going to get is James Bond, and that's just one actor with three or four other support actors. But that's why this trilogy is so beloved, Mo, because you had those same people sticking together either through contract or through love of what they were doing to make this wonderful set of films that we still know and love today. It's almost like three people who stick together to do a podcast for 6 years.
Wow.
That's unheard amazing. Of.
Coming up on 5 Minute News, I'm Anthony Davis. You might think it's partisan because maybe it's critical of one side or the other, but it's not. It's just the truth. And I think that's also something that's kind of unusual for Americans listening to the radio or to podcasts, because the news landscape in the States has been so partisan for so many decades. So 5 Minute News is verified, truthful, independent, unbiased, and essential world news daily.
Each episode of Gen X Grown Up has show notes loaded with links where you can learn more about our topics. And there's even more to see and hear over at genxgrownup.com.
Your VCR may never be the same. It's coming February 25th. Return of the Jedi. It's thrilling. It's dangerous. It's delightful. It's the movie our whole galaxy has been waiting for. So reserve your copy now. and invite a friend over. Return of the Jedi from CBS Fox.
Okay, now I have something to contribute to the Star Wars Return of the Jedi backtrack. this look, I love this film, but not as much as so many people who are much more invested in it than I am. And we've alluded, we talked about, you know, how it got made and the amazing talent that got it made and kind of, you know, their histories and somewhat. But the thing that makes this so powerful is the story and how the story beats resonate and how it kind of culminated these other two films in this trilogy that at the time we thought was the last Star Wars we would ever see. Mm-hmm. And in rewatching Jedi, and I watched the despecialized version, you know, the one that when they kind of backed out all of the Lucas changes, you know, admittedly, it looks crunchier and grittier and not as perfect, but it was okay because it's from 83. Yeah. It didn't bother me.
Right.
But the thing that really struck me as really awe-inspiring that you didn't think about when you saw it the first time because you're too close to it is as I'm watching it, I'm like, when I was in the theater watching it, I didn't know how these things that were being revealed for the first time were going to be touchstone things that everybody on the planet knows. Like, oh, there's a Rancor. Now everybody knows what that is. A Sarlacc. Here's Endor. Here's the Ewoks. All these things that now you can't talk to somebody and go, do you know what an Ewok is? Nobody goes, no, what is it? Everybody knows. But it's neat kind of like being at the origin of it and going, oh, nobody ever heard of this until this moment in this film, and now it is an absolute cornerstone of pop culture.
Yeah,
and it was it was a neat way to watch it, thinking about it like that.
Like that was the first time, right?
Yeah, the first time all this stuff was in the world. Yeah,
you know, and it's funny because I watched the special edition that he did.
You did?
I watched that version of it, and it bothered me, to be honest, because I wish I had not watched it, but I was kind of like, okay, it's already on. I don't feel like getting up. But every time something was different, it caught my attention. One, like it was very obvious that it was different, yeah. And I didn't find a single thing he added to the movie, you know, that made it better, that made it, at least for me, like I couldn't see, like,
yeah,
I couldn't think of anything that like substantial, like, oh wow, I'm so glad he did that part because it made that scene so much better, you know.
I mean, you get what, a fly-in scene of them going into Mos Eisley, right? That's one of the first things added. You get a bunch of extra characters in some of those walking around
background
scenes.
Characters they threw in.
You get the scene with Solo and Jabba in the hangar.
Oh yeah, that was in Star Wars, the first Star Wars.
Well, this is all in the first film you're talking about.
I'm thinking of the first Star Wars. Well, this was there anything extra in Return?
The Sarlacc, that creature was completely different in the specialized
version.
Different.
That's right. Yeah. They added a bunch of digital stuff to it. He had a Maurice the Plant thing.
Exactly.
Come out. Yeah.
Little puppet thing.
Little Shop of Horrors kind of deal going on there.
Right.
Yeah. And there was just little things like that throughout the movie. And I'm looking at these. I'm like, actually, they just sort of draw my, like, it doesn't look right. It just didn't fit. You know, so again, did it get me to the theater to watch it when he did it? Yeah. Did it get me to buy the DVDs when he did it? Yeah. So I guess it succeeded on his side, but for me, I don't see a point behind it.
In preparation for this backtrack, we reached out to a lot of our listeners over on Discord to ask them about their most memorable parts of Jedi. Mm-hmm. And we're going to do that in the next segment. But first, I think it'd be interesting to kind of run round table here and talk about our favorite either moments or scenes or whatever from this film, especially because it's fresh in our mind. And George, why don't we start with you? Just anything that jumps out at you that's so memorable for you about this film?
Well, I'm going to talk about it because it stood out to me in the same way that Mo was just talking about in the specialized edition, the Sarlacc Maurice plant thing stood out to him. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to talk about this in every movie we review from here till the end of time. And that's wherever they place the Wilhelm scream.
So of course.
The Wilhelm scream is this famous piece of sound, you know, whatever it is. That's in everything from cowboy movies to science fiction. And in this place, it's in that same Sarlacc pit battle scene.
I heard it.
One of the guys, he gets hit in the shoulder with a lightsaber from Luke on the little, the rickety floating thing. And he goes into the Sarlacc pit with that Wilhelm scream. Yeah. And I'm just like, that is so fucking out of place in a sci-fi desert Sarlacc pit scene. But it drew my attention the same way, you know, that your thing did.
It's like, was he mic'd? Why did we hear his scream so well? Right. Three other people have already fallen in, you know.
Like, it wasn't even subtle. Like, they
that
didn't.
Guy.
No.
No. Yeah. I noticed it too. You know, I'll tell you, because we planned for this backtrack, right? And we're like, let's talk. I'm watching this film looking for what are the things that stand out to me, or what are the most memorable, or in my case, it's things that I'd forgotten about that really made me smile. And the one that it was so giddy, I actually rewinded it to watch it some more, because I was watching it seriously, but I was a little distracted, you know. But this one, I'm like, whoa, 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 what just happened? And I think it's so neat how they kind of like elevated C-3PO to God status for the Ewoks, you know, to help get things going on. But I loved how he's in like the little hut and he's telling the whole story of Star Wars to the Ewoks.
Right.
He's doing the special effects. He's like, "Oh, but he's only got Darth Vader," you know. Talking in their language.
Was doing the sound effects.
Is that what it was? Yeah. And then he talks a little bit more, and then he talks about lightsaber. You hear noises, and so these two are creating the entire, like the whole movies, all the whole trilogy.
Yeah,
3PO is telling, and they loved it like we love it, like they were getting into it. So, it means in the world of Star Wars, the story of Star Wars is entertainment for someone in the world of Star Wars. The Ewoks love this story, and I thought that was
the
so
little
cool.
Baby Ewok shivering when he's talking about the scary parts.
Yeah, it's scary. That was so neat.
And he does when Han Solo gets in the carbonite, and then when the Ewoks goes up to Han Solo and like starts like stroking him or something,
because he knows he's the guy, right? I thought that was amazing, and I'd forgotten about it until I watched it this time, and I'm like, oh my god, that's so cool.
Yeah, yeah, it was funny. One of the first scenes that came in my mind was not so much from the scene itself, but the experience of seeing it the first time is very clear in my head, because, you know, we were hungry for this movie, and this movie came out 3 years after the last one, I think, instead of 2 years, if I'm not mistaken, right? We were like starving for the next Star Wars movie. Like, everyone was talking about it. Everyone wanted to see, especially the way the second one kind of ended on a cliffhanger, you know? And the first, I remember the first scene when first, you know, you see R2-D2, C-3PO, and every time when the characters appeared, the theater just started applauding. Like, there they are.
Oh, right? Yeah.
Like, everyone's like, yeah. And then when Luke Skywalker
walked up.
We're
getting the band back together.
Yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm. And then when Luke Skywalker like came up and finally took his hood off, you know, put the hood back.
Like,
everyone's
oh,
like,
shit,
the crowd just went, nuts and broke out applause. And at the end, and then they applaud at the end when he's like, when, you know, Lando Calrissian's like, we're out of here. You know, when they finally save everybody. Yep. I mean, I swear the theater just erupted, and I was with them too. Cause it was, I think, the perfect opening scene for that movie, because it just put you right back into the mindset, into where you needed to be to see the rest of that film.
And that's in the era when you didn't know anything that was going to happen. There was no reliable internet rumor mill.
Right.
Spoilers didn't reach you. And it was theaters packed with people who'd stood around the block to get in, and every seat was taken and everyone was invested. Nobody was fucking with a phone, because first they didn't have phones.
We didn't have phones.
But they weren't futzing with anything, right? They were there for the movie. And I miss that experience of the crowd applauding at a screen, at some light on a screen, because they're in it.
Like, people on the screen can't hear you. It doesn't matter.
Right, exactly.
I got to say, one of my favorite scenes, and this one, you know, I know we're talking about emotions and memories and things like that, but it was a scene that I really enjoyed in Return of the Jedi. It was really Lando's speed run through the Death Star to the
core. That was cool.
Right.
And I loved it for a lot of different reasons. Number one, it obviously mimics Luke's run through the Death Star trench in the first film. We also had that cool as hell, like, amphibian co-pilot guy. Right. I don't know what the fuck he is either, but with the laugh that he did.
Oh, the short guy. Yeah. The short guy with
like little short guy with the flaps on
the
his
wet fish lips. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. He was cool. Yeah.
He was really fun. And I love that there were real consequences to it, because as they're flying through the superstructure, ships are hitting the walls and bouncing off of each other. Even the Millennium Falcon takes some serious damage, you know, at one point when it hits the satellite dish gets blown off the roof. Yeah.
And Lando had sworn not a scratch.
Not a scratch.
As soon as that thing came off, like, oh damn, Solo's gonna be pissed at you.
But plus the fact that it was originally Lando's ship.
Right? Oh yeah. Yeah, he knows what he's
before
doing.
It was Solo's. I'm thinking about all these different things. And I love the fact that they gave that Death Star kill to not one of the main characters.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. It was the Rebellion Army. Yeah.
It was always, you know, a main character was the one who was going to get the last word. In the first film, it's Luke blowing up Death Star. In the second film, it's Darth Vader, you know, cutting off Luke's hand, right? Mm-hmm. Somebody, one of the main people, not in this one, give it to Lando. Let him go in there and blow shit up.
Yeah.
I love that.
I love the scene that, when they're flying out and the explosion with the Millennium Falcon, flying through the explosion.
Like the flames are coming behind them, like space flames. But yeah, I get it.
Space flames.
Right. Yeah.
Things can blow up. Sure. I'm going with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was cool. Another one, which is, again, I'm thinking the memories of it more so than the scene is, the climactic Luke versus Vader, right? At the end.
Oh. Yeah. You know? Oh, heavy.
Mm. And,
the whole movie was worth waiting to get to that part.
Right. And how Luke's, they're fighting. And now Luke's, hiding, basically. And Vader's trying to fight. Like, he's using the Force, almost, I think, to make himself invisible or something. And then when he mentions Leia and Luke loses his shit.
He's like, I'm coming out of hiding. Don't talk about my sister. Exactly. Get my sister's name out your damn mouth.
And just brute force beats Vader. Oh, I mean, it wasn't style at all. It was just brute force. Him just beating on him, beating on him.
The hatred flow through you.
And the thing that got me, though, and this is the part that just still cracks me up, is that when the Emperor now is like, now you die, and he's shooting him with the lightning thing, right?
Right.
And they keep flipping the Vader. They keep flipping back to Luke. And they keep flipping back to Vader. The theater, it was a woman in the crowd said, what the hell are you waiting for?
What wasn't amazing that with that mask and the editing and the angles, you could tell that he was having doubts just by the turn of his head and how long he looked at things. You knew he was about to snap. And that guy knew it.
But she, I mean, just this woman's voice, because we're all dead quiet, watching the thing, and Luke's screaming, help me. And she's like, what the hell are you waiting for? And then he grabs him and everyone starts applauding.
Oh, there's a scene near the end also, as we're getting toward the end of the film. Fortunately, we stacked these in order through the film, almost like we planned.
Yeah.
This is just a moment. This is just a beat. We were talking earlier about Han Solo, who else could have played Han Solo, because he's already that guy,
Right.
Ford is. So near the end, and they've just about taken care of disabling the shield generator, and they call up to the Death Star and they act like, oh, everything's good. We just about got it eliminated. We just need a little more backup to mop up the remaining people. And really, they were trying to draw the guys out of the shield generator so they could go in.
Right.
And they walk out, they step behind them, they're hiding on the wall, and Han Solo walks up in the middle of them, looks at the guys and gives them this Fonzarelli kind of, this look. That's the most Han Solo thing I've ever seen Han Solo do. It encapsulated his entire character for me. He's like, you dumb shits, look what happened to you. Han Solo got the best of you. Ha ha. But he just said it with a posture, just the look. I loved that was another one I rewound. I'm like, I just want to watch him just be snarky at all these Imperial guys
super
again.
Snarky.
Because it was neat.
Yeah.
And I think that even kind of circles back to what we were talking about before. We talk about the talent, how we had seen these people now for three films. It would have been unthinkable for those people to not be back, because then we wouldn't have had Han Solo wasn't going to be in the film. And we got what arguably is the most Han Solo moment at the end of the third film that he wasn't necessarily going to be in. And that's why these scenes and these characters and these movies had such and continue to have such a dramatic impact on everything, not just pop culture, entertainment, every other movie for that matter.
Right.
All right. Hey, when we get back from this break, we're going to get into those fourth listener comments, what they remember about Jedi. Stick around.
I'm Ken Harbaugh, host of Warriors in Their Own Words, a podcast that presents the unvarnished, unsanitized truth of what we have asked of those who defend this nation. As a country, we need these stories more than ever. Stories from Americans who have borne the battle, including 30-year-old remastered interviews with veterans from World War I recounting their time in the trenches of Europe, and with veterans from World War II, Korea, Vietnam, and from our most recent conflicts in Iraq, Afghanistan, and other battlefields Americans may never have heard of. Hear their stories by listening to Warriors in Their Own Words wherever you find podcasts.
If you're a diehard Gen X grown-up, you can pledge your support by clicking join on YouTube or by becoming a patron at genxgrownup.com/Patreon.
Crystal Magic, Return of the Jedi.
With Presto Magic's Return of the Jedi Super Transfer Set, you get a big action board and over 150 Star Wars transfers to make the action come alive.
Watch this! Here comes Darth Vader! Oh no! Hold on, Han, I'll see you!
Presto Magic's with all of your favorites makes the action come alive!
We love our fourth listeners, all the great supporters who listen to the show and comment and write in and tell us what they like and they don't. And we had such a good time with what was the episode we did not long ago? It was all fourth listeners, the lunchroom, right? That backtracked.
Yeah.
Right? So George had the great idea. You know what? Let's reach out to the fourth listeners in case they have memories from Jedi. And you're not going to be super surprised. There's some overlap between the things we love and the things they love. Let me jump right in. We just have five or six of these. Listener Brody Quinn over on Discord writes in and says, I remember being annoyed that Chewbacca didn't get a medal along with everyone else.
That's in the first film.
Yeah.
Well, they explained that.
Did they?
Princess Leia was too short.
Oh, really?
She
well,
first
film. Well, they don't explain that in a movie.
No, but that was
explanation. Right. Later. Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah.
It says, and of course, Leia in the gold bikini. Big highlight for Brody Quinn.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's not a bad highlight.
No, it's not.
Yeah.
He says, I'm sure I'm not alone on that one. Even Ross on Friends was into that.
Hey, it wasn't just Ross and Friends. That scene is so iconic. Like, even the movie, what was it? The Internship.
Mm-hmm.
The one where the two guys go to Google.
Yeah, Google, right.
There's like a character that she's there and she's like into S&M stuff. And she's like, oh yeah, you guys would be the greatest Luke and Han ever. I'd be Princess Leia, metal top bikini thing around my neck. Slightly choking.
Like, slightly damn. Joking. He wraps up by saying, I will say this was the last great Star Wars movie, though.
Mm.
What do you think about that?
Yeah, I guess, I don't know. They had some good ones.
But are they great?
I don't know that it was great.
Okay.
It was really good. It was the weakest of the three originals.
Yeah.
For me.
Really?
Yeah, okay. we've already had this debate.
Podcast where we argued about that already.
But I like the ones that have come out more recently.
Mm-hmm.
I even like some of the trailers. You know what? I like Star Wars. Fuck it. I don't give it. I'm not going to be ashamed anymore. I like all the Star Wars films.
Well, you know, the things people don't remember is young people don't realize that Gen Xers were growing up, and after Jedi, that was the end of Star Wars. Yeah. We weren't getting anything else. Now, we heard the rumor of three more films.
Said, oh, it's supposed to be, because he started with
Shove Your Christmas Special.
Episode 4. I mean, they said it was episode 4 when he started it. So we're like, we're in the first three.
And then we thought it was it. So now when we're getting stuff, look, like you said, George, it's a buffet. Eat what you want. You don't have to eat everything on the buffet.
Yeah.
It's all food you can enjoy. If you don't like the shrimp, have the steak. If you don't like the steak, have the lobster. You know, whatever. It's different flavors of the same kind of palate.
And I'm not giving Brody Quinn shit at all.
No, I get it. Yeah. It's his opinion.
No, he's not horribly wrong or anything like that with that statement. It's just, I don't know. They stick Star Wars on it. I'm going to freaking watch it. I mean, there's new series coming out every goddamn day on
and
Disney+.
And I'm
going to
watch every single one of them.
I'm going to watch every single one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Our next listener, Inscrutable Owl, relatively recent, just the last few months, and got real, real active and a great supporter. Hit us up on Discord. Says, I remember being disappointed that Boba Fett died so early and cheaply in the first act.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people were Boba Fett
was
fans.
Bad.
Yeah. I was so looking forward to seeing a big battle between him and either Han or Lando, but the Mandalorian makes up for it at least.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Along with Leia's bikini. There's another vote for Leia's bikini. I remember being thrilled when she took off her helmet to reveal herself to Han. That was terrifically exciting.
That was nice.
That was cool, right? It was just some bounty
Someone
hunter.
Someone who loves you.
Yeah. Oh, that was cool.
Was awesome.
That was great. Marcus, longtime supporter. Marcus first says, I'm going to also sign off on Leia's bikini, he mentions.
Okay.
And then he goes on to say, losing my mind when R2 shot Luke his lightsaber and he fires it up and just starts wailing on people.
Yep.
That was exciting. It was one of the only outings I ever remember having alone with my aunt. She was on a college break and took me to see it. The half-sized walkers I thought were awesome.
Oh, the little two-foot steppers. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
At ST?
AT-ST.
Is that right?
AT-ST.
Okay. Yeah. I remember collecting the Topps trading cards a pack at a time over the whole summer till I had all of them.
Mm.
Finally, the scene where Luke very suddenly uses the Force to snatch the lightsaber and has his swing to kill the Emperor blocked by Vader.
Yeah.
They go from too much talking with no laser swords to an iconic lightsaber clash within part of a second.
Yeah.
Because he was seething, right? And the Emperor is like, let the hate flow through you. You're coming to my side. And he's resisting. Like, I don't want my hate to take over. And finally he's like, fuck it, I'm on. I'm going.
Yeah.
Right? Best line in that scene is when Ian McDormand, he just casually moves his hand over to the lightsaber and he goes, you want this?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. He knew.
Just so creepy and narcissistic all at the same time.
Touch it. Touch my saber.
When
when R2-D2 just throw the lightsaber to Luke, because part of the thing was like, wait a minute, Luke lost his lightsaber in the last movie.
Yeah, like, what are you going to do? Mm-hmm.
And then when it flipped out, it's like, oh, it's green. You know, it's like, it's a new lightsaber. You know, it was pretty cool.
Oh, that didn't register with me. I didn't realize that it was a new one because it was a different color. That's how you could tell, because it's the crystal inside or something. Yes, is that how it works?
Color. Yeah. Yep.
The Kyber crystal.
Yeah, I knew you got something. It, George.
I've been to the Disney theme park. You I made know your how lightsaber. Much that shit costs.
Yep. Sparks821 hit us up and said, one of the best effects I thought at the time was the chase through the forest on the speeder bikes.
Mm. Mm. Oh, yeah.
Just the fast motion of the trees whizzing by and the troopers and Leia dodging everything really set the pace. A few years later, I found out how they achieved that effect. They would walk through the forest with a camera and capture a frame every second or two.
Yeah.
And then when they played it back in real time, that would speed everything up on film. Star Wars had its trench run. Empire had the snow speeder up and down the snow hills. Jedi had this.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. That's fair.
Actually, it's the Muir Woods up north, just north of San Francisco. And I went there. I was actually walking through it. And I'm like, this is it.
Did you find that tree that was broken in half falling over?
No, I looked. No. Ah. It's a really big forest. It's a huge place. But still, though, just the idea. I'm sitting there. I'm like, this looks familiar. And I'm like, wait a minute.
Why are there not? That's what. Like signs up at that forest. Here's where this part of Jedi was shot. There should be everywhere.
Right, little landmarks.
They would get a billion visitors a year and they could charge
money. Do a walking trail, right? Of all the different places. Yeah. Here's where they swung the things and smashed the AT-ST, you know, all those places. Yep. I was thinking about the speeder bikes chase and it occurred to me, is there possibly any worse vehicle to drive in any worse environment than these bikes in this forest? Because they go like a bat out of hell in tight quarters where it's hard to turn. There's vines and shit everywhere. And they have these two little hooky fins on the front that could easily get stuck in anything.
Mm-hmm. Big ass trees.
Why would they not have like a bubble to roll in or something that could bounce off of trees? Why would you have these crazy bikes? It was exciting. Granted, it was exciting, but it seemed like the most impractical vehicle in that forest ever.
Or fly above the forest.
Sure. Right. Yeah. Don't fly inside. Anything else. All right, one more. George, this is from Stubaca, you have been known to say.
There you go.
Stubaca wrote in and said, my favorite memory of Return of the Jedi is the speeder scene on Endor. Yeah.
Yeah.
Northern Cali in the Redwood National Forest, as you said, Mo. I was born in California, and although my earliest childhood memory is watching the Death Star explode in the original Star Wars, when I saw Jedi and the speeder scene in it, it actually gave me homesickness.
Oh, really?
We had moved to Texas in 80, and I still miss those Redwoods. Mm. Wow. As a personal connection back to Jedi. And you weren't expecting, you didn't know it was going to be in Jedi. You didn't know it was going to be races through the Redwood Forest. And can you imagine sitting there and going, oh, where I grew up? You know, here's the area that I know so well. That had to be cool. Wow, man. I don't know. I think we survived an entire Return of the Jedi backtrack without getting into any fights over anything. I'm so happy. There's no Han shot first stuff in Return of the Jedi.
We fought before.
Yeah, we've fighting about debate. Jedi already. Got it out of our systems. Yeah. Guys, I want to thank you for your research in this, you know, gathering information, for helping me understand stuff. You know, I think you said like D&D, Mo, is like, I don't need to do much research. It's already in my head. So,
right.
Yeah. Oh, all right. Hey, fourth listener, if you did not get your comments in about Return of the Jedi, and this is if this is a memorable film for you, if there's something particularly memorable about this film for you, this very well, if we get enough response on this one, this might be one of our fourth listener feedback episodes, because I have a feeling we're going to get a lot of email about this. So don't hesitate, write in. We try to feature all of our fourth listeners, and I know everybody has something to say about
Jedi. I should say anything about maybe the first trilogy, right? Because we pretty much covered them all at this point.
Yeah,
Star Wars, Empire Strikes Back, and Return of the Jedi. So any comments on any of that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Hey, guys, that's going to wrap it up for this backtrack. I'm so grateful that you're here. I'm so grateful to the fourth listeners to hang out with us. We're going to be back in 2 weeks with another backtrack. And next week is the regular edition of our show. Until then, I am John. George, thank you so much for being here.
Yes, sir.
Mo, you know I appreciate you, man.
Always fun, man.
Fourth listener, it is you we all appreciate most of all. And we will talk to you again next time. Bye-bye.
See you guys.
Take care, everybody.
JedX Grown Up is a member of the Evergreen Podcast family. Learn more at evergreenpodcasts.com. No more washy shows till sunrise. Unacceptable for grown-ups. Your dinner cannot just be french fries. Basically, life sucks as a grown-up.
Are you sure your blood sugar's not going low?
Oh, because I was stuttering? No. Not with this Kool-Aid. You know what I thought was funny is that when Vader got his hand chopped off and he had a robotic hand too, not knowing what I knew about everything else, the science fiction nerd in me was like, it's his future self because he also has a fake hand. But it was a coincidence of his whole body was like that basically. Right. So now I know what happened to him exactly, because I didn't understand that Vader was all fucked up. I thought he was just in a suit, but his suit's kind of him. Yeah. Anyway.
Hello, and welcome to Novel Conversations, a podcast about the world's greatest stories. I'm your host, Frank Lavallo, and for each episode of Novel Conversations, I talk to two readers about one book. And together, we summarize the story for you. We introduce you to the characters, we tell you what happens to them, and we read from the book along the way. So if you love hearing a good story, you're in the right place. Our 9th season is coming this fall. Tune in to hear from some of the all-time great authors, Charles Dickens, Jules Verne, F. Scott Fitzgerald, and more. Subscribe to Novel Conversations wherever you listen to podcasts.